The date is October 5th, 1984, and we're watching The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the perfect Tommy to my Buckaroo Banzai.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
So this week, we have taken a listener request. Someone reached into our DMs over on Facebook and asked us to do this movie. So, James F., this episode is for you. And we brought in a guest. Now, I had the pleasure of doing Elf the Musical back over the Christmas break. And I met this man. And boy, talking to this guy backstage, I discovered that what I thought was an eclectic movie taste that I had ended up being overshadowed by this man. And this week's movie, spoiler alert, I have never seen. So I brought in someone that I was sure had probably seen this movie. Please welcome Mr. David Owen.
Hello, everyone.
So, David, am I right in presuming that this is a movie that you have seen at some point before this week?
Oh, yes. Back in the late 80s, I worked for the alternative video spot. And the section that I was the expert in was the cult films.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Quite familiar with this movie, right on. Well, this week for James F., we are looking back at October 1984, when the movies and theaters were All of Me, Kids from Shaolin, Amadeus, the Transformers movie, like the animated Transformers movie, and of course, our movie for today, the Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension, which earned $6.3 million on a $17 million budget.
I mean, all things considered, it's not that bad.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, actually, $17 million is a pretty big budget for a 1984 movie, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah. But as always, there will be spoilers ahead, although I'm not sure that spoiling this movie could really, like, affect your watching of it at all, because I've watched it 3 times, and I'm still not certain I know what happened.
It's baffling.
But if you don't want the movie to be spoiled for you, then please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, well, this is where it gets muddled. And because I say that I've found 2 for this movie, but this first one I took entirely off an actual poster. But when I was looking for alternates, those sites listed it as 3 taglines. But I've got beings from another dimension have invaded your world. You can't see them, but they can see you. Your only hope is Buckaroo Banzai. So that's the first tagline that I took off the poster. But like I said, the actual sites that I usually go to for taglines listed it as 3 separate taglines. But it's pretty thorough. The second tagline is expect the unexpected. He does. I like that one. Colin's got nothing to say. He's just waiting until the main discussion to like heat on this movie. Well, let's go to Colin and find out how he interpreted this movie with his 60-second synopsis.
Yeah, so I think I've only ever done this for one movie previous, but, like, I could not wrap my head around this movie. I'm still, like, I'm sure I will learn new things about this movie as we go through this discussion. And so I didn't feel qualified to write a synopsis, so I found one on tribute.ca that I thought, you know, it even illuminated some for me, so here we go. Drifting between satire and improbable sci-fi adventure, The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension stars Peter Weller as Buckaroo Banzai, the son of an American mother and a Japanese father, who is a combination physicist, neurosurgeon, martial arts master, secret agent, and rock star who travels with his band of assistants slash backing musicians, the Hong Kong Cavaliers. As the story opens, Buckaroo is driving his car through a mountain to test his new invention, the Oscillation Overthruster. However, a race of boorish aliens called the Red Electroids have been waiting for such an item to become a reality, as they needed to return to the distant planet they call home. One of Buckaroo's arch-enemies, Dr. Emilio Lizardo, played by John Lithgow, who has been possessed by the Red Electroids, attempted to create a similar device decades before. Oh, that's interesting.
Now escaped
from an insane asylum, he is back at work with the Electroids on a plan to control the world. Throw in Rastafarian aliens, unscheduled travel between dimensions, and the odd inexplicable watermelon, and you get a film that defies conventional synopsis. With his fast-paced, quotable dialogue, no matter where you go, there you are, and barrage of gags, subtle and otherwise, you won't be bored even when you're not sure what's going on.
Agree to disagree.
The supporting cast includes Jeff Goldblum as New Jersey, a cavalier with a snappy cowboy outfit, and Ellen Barkin as Penny Pretty, the twin sister of Buckaroo's late wife. I think that'll suffice.
Yep.
Right on.
The twin sister separated at birth and had no knowledge of each other.
Yeah, as you do. So, yeah, for me personally, this was one of those movies that I had only ever heard of. I knew nothing about this movie, and that showed as soon as I went in, because I like to play the game that Colin usually has to play, but that's predict what's going to happen. And so I looked at nothing before I turned on this movie. I didn't even look at a picture of it. And I'm like looking at, as I'm going in, I'm like, Peter Weller, John Lithgow, Jeff Goldblum, Christopher Lloyd, what the fuck is going on? But I had only ever heard of this movie. Going in, I predicted that it was going to be a time travel movie because they have a device that looks like a flux capacitor. I was way off. But Colin, did you even know this movie existed? I'm sure you had never seen it before now, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, I'd never seen it. I'd never even heard of it until it was brought forth.
Okay.
It's hard for me to even say what I was expecting. I don't even know what I was expecting. Like, I think I was expecting, you know, like Lavalantula, you know, like one of those B-type movies that you would see now that would star, like, Alfonso Ribeiro and one of the lesser known Baldwins.
Yeah.
That's kind of the movie I felt like I was going into, which it kind of is in a way, but I don't know. It's a strange movie.
Well, I know I watched it. Now, this movie has come up in one of our past episodes, one of our last listener request episodes, Little Giants. We talked about this movie because Colin had tried to start watching it a few times. Now, I had watched it before him, and I said that it gives me really strong Big Trouble in Little China energy. And that's the mentality you have to go when, you know, when you look at this movie. Now, as I mentioned in the beginning, I know that David has an eclectic movie taste, and I was sure that this was one of the movies that he knows. How familiar are you with Buckaroo Banzai? Like, how, you know, what kind of history do you have?
I knew of it pretty well beforehand, which is why it came up in our conversation backstage. Like, oh, you're doing an old movies podcast. You got to do Buckaroo Banzai. And then watching it twice in the last month, again, watching all the special features, I've gained some more insight into why the story is kind of all over the place, because they actually took out the supervillain part, Hanoi Zen. So the original story that the novel that the book is based on has a whole other layer to it, okay, which sort of pulls it together, but also stirs it up more.
Yeah.
And I read today that writer has the end of the movie. They talk about the next adventure of Buckaroo Banzai with the World Crime League.
Yeah.
That book came out last November by the same writer. So, wow. But how well do I know the movie? Well, I watched it several times when I was a teenager, like late teens, going to university, working at the video spot. It reminded me of a character, Jerry Cornelius from the Michael Moorcock movies, who is like rock star, scientist, secret agent. But also there's this other level to him where, like, depending on the story, he changes genders. He changes like inverse videos. So instead of black hair and white skin, it's black skin and white hair. Like it's very psychedelic. And it's that series of books was started in the 60s and ended in the late 70s.
Okay.
So 1978 was the last Jerry Cornelius book. Then you move to the writer writing Buckaroo Banzai. It gets shopped around and it's made in 84 with a very similar character, but American.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like all American, not half Japanese.
Yeah. So it was an interesting parallel. So I was kind of into Buckaroo that way, where like it was just like a trip, right?
Have you read the sequel book then, since it's come out?
No, I just found out it exists today, actually.
Oh, okay.
So I have to find it.
Right on. Yeah. I mean, I know there was plans to be a sequel, and because this bombed so badly, that's why it was never made. But yeah, the book, I imagine, is the, well, you guys always wanted it, so at least let me give it to you.
Yeah.
Well, in the special features that for the DVD that came out in the 90s, the director, I can't remember his name right now, but he talked about it. Yeah, I'd be open to doing a second film. I hope it happens, et cetera, et cetera. But that was in the 90s when they made the DVD copy with all the bonus features.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, here, let me tell you who the director is, because let's jump into Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. It's directed by W.D. Richter, who this is one of two directing credits that he has. The other is Late for Dinner in 1991. Have you ever seen that movie? No?
Okay. No.
And he's got a bunch of writing credits, though. It's produced by W.D. Richter as well as Neil Canton. And it's written by Earl McRock, who has 5 total writing credits. And so we open this movie on, like, the scroll. So, I mean, the scroll kind of helps. But I know that, like Colin, I watched this movie 3 times as well to try to figure out what the fuck was going on. And the third time is when the scroll in the beginning about who he really is and like who the Hong Kong Cavaliers are. That's when like the Tetris finally happened for me, you know, like all the pieces finally fit into place. And I'm like, oh, okay. Now it kind of makes sense that this is your everyman, or I guess not everyman, the opposite of everyman. This is just your, I don't know.
Yeah, he's literally like every little boy's dream. Like when I remember when you're like a little boy and you're like, oh, like I want to be a rock star.
I'll be a cowboy astronaut.
I would say like any rock star NHL player. You know, like
veterinarian was always Superman. In there for me.
Yeah, like, yeah. And that's kind of the vibe I get from him. I'm sure for American, he's probably like a football player or something like that. But
yeah.
Yeah, he's like the world's most perfect man. But even with the opening credits, though, I know I was looking at the opening credits and I was expecting them to like look really just old, and they were crisp. And I'm like, oh, OK, this movie had some money behind it, you know, back in the 80s. I might be in for something completely different. But so they open this movie with the like he's in surgery. And they want him to do this rocket car test. Now, I need to ask about the surgeons, first of all. Would he be, like, do actual surgeons wear these hooded astronaut helmet things that he was wearing? Or is that just so you can see the actors' faces? Because everyone else in the OR was wearing just a regular surgical mask.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, so I kind of
Goldblum. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of have to think it's, like, maybe it's his special equipment. He's so far advanced in his surgical capabilities that, you know, he's come up with stuff that's not sold on the broader market.
Oh.
That's just for his use only.
There you go.
I just want to point out in the special features, the director talking about it, I found out most of the lines were improvised. The scenes were improvised. When you watch Jeff Goldblum just kind of like spewing all this stuff about brain surgery, that's Jeff Goldblum spewing stuff about brain surgery.
Wow. That makes...
I realized watching this movie because I think the only real Jeff Goldblum I know is Jurassic Park and Independence Day.
Yeah.
And I was watching this movie, which clearly came out, you know, 10 years before. And I was just like, man, the guy has not changed. Like he is just... he is just that guy.
Yeah.
You know, like he's one of those actors that I think you just hired Jeff Goldblum to be Jeff Goldblum in the movie.
See, maybe for Halloween, we need to pull out The Fly for you too, if you're just loving just some Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, yeah. You know? Good Cronenberg film.
Yeah. Yeah.
John Lithgow too. Man, he can do anything.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, it was funny because we were talking in Harry and the Hendersons about how our guest was saying, like, you know, we see him now and he's old, but it's like, has he ever been under 30? I don't know. Like he always looks 50 no matter what. And this was, again, this was 10 years before Harry and the Hendersons.
Yeah.
I think we did the math in Harry and the Hendersons. He was
40,
maybe like mid to late 30s or something like
that. That's what it was. Late 30s. Yeah.
So the world, according to Garp, Lithgow was in there as a transvestite football player.
Okay.
And I think that was around the same time this film was shot. So, like, his range.
Yeah. Well, he'll do a little bit of everything, that's for sure. He was my favorite villain on Dexter.
Yeah, for sure. He gave me, his performance as Dr. Lizardo reminded me a lot of Jim Carrey as the Riddler in Batman Forever.
There was definitely some Jim Carrey energy. Yeah. 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 Well, see, and one thing I found funny, because of our conversation with Harry and the Hendersons about how, you know, John Lithgow must have just come right out of the womb as a middle-aged man, but I found it funny that the Japanese man, Dr. Saito, is that what his name is? And they put like that terrible wrinkly age makeup on him so that the flashback he looks younger, but they didn't do anything to John Lithgow. Like they didn't de-age him for the flashback scene. Like he's not looking as rough because he doesn't have the red eyes and his hair's not quite as black, but you know, so that just shows that he's always looked old.
that flashback scene where Lizardo, like, you know, he's trying to do the eighth dimension thing and that gave me like Silent Movie vibes. It reminded me of a Chaplin film where he's just like
puts his
helmet on, gives the cheers, and just like runs headfirst, drives headfirst into this wall.
But then it's also got like some like classic Frankenstein type vibes. Oh, classic. Okay. Universal Monster Frankenstein vibes. It's a combination. It's this weird hybrid of the Universal Monsters and Chaplin.
I mean when Buckaroo post-surgery goes into the car and is I thought there was gonna be to be honest, I don't really understand the whole eighth dimension thing.
Yeah.
Like I don't understand like where all these like weird skeletons and monsters and stuff come from. Like what? I don't really know that I know what the eighth dimension is. Like, are the aliens in the eighth dimension, or is this just?
Or are they the guardians of the eighth dimension, which is why they're hovering around? Like how do the Lectroids factor into the eighth dimension?
I have a theory.
Okay, good.
My working theory is that the red Lectroid guy that was exiled from the planet, they exiled him in the eighth dimension. And so when Lithgow's character stuck his head into the eighth dimension, he took over his body. And then that's how he came back to this dimension. So by traveling through with the working overthruster, that got... Lithgow's character excited again. Like, it's possible because he wants to go home. Why he has to go back to the eighth dimension, that's the part I haven't quite figured out.
Yeah, I don't think I realized until I was reading various synopses today. Like, I didn't get that Lithgow, like, Dr. Lizardo... I thought, like, Dr. Lizardo was just a crazy... Like, just a crazy guy. I didn't get that he was, like, possessed or infected. I just thought he had gone mad for some reason.
See, yeah, that's what I thought it was, too, was that the eighth dimension had driven him mad.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I think, based on what I read, I think that you're right. Like, he's possessed.
Yeah, now that I hear that, it makes total sense.
Yeah. I can't remember what the John something, whatever the guy's like.
Big Boutte? No,
John Worfen. Lord John Worfen.
That's what it was, yeah.
And that's why the black electroids came in their ship and they were going to have Earth destroy itself if he was let out.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Something like, yeah, because he was a space war criminal that had been exiled, but he escaped.
Gotcha.
I like the very non-subtle fact that the black electroids are the Rastafarians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're the black guys.
Because like, there is the one point, like, once John Lithgow gets out and he's making the speech and he's like, there are blacks among us! And I'm like, whoa, shit! Wait a second! He is as bad as Hitler! Because up to this point, the fact that you said that he was as bad as our Hitler, it hasn't been shown up to this point, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. Once he started saying that, I'm like, okay, now I see the parallels. Holy shit.
Where are we going? Planet 10. When are we going there? Pretty soon.
Oh, man. Yeah. I also wonder, like, why would you name your planet Planet 10? Come on. Like, that's such a boring name for a planet.
In a human-centric universe, all the planets are, yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say, why would...
How do you even know what 10 is?
Yeah. But now we're now I've got this whole third rock from the sun connection. Oh my god, see?
Yeah.
Look at that. All connected.
Yeah. So the rocket car, that came out before the DeLorean in Back to the Future, but they look kind of similar.
Yeah.
The way it's all made up. Yeah. But they put an actual rocket engine on the back of that truck, according to the special features.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Like, and like actually lit it too.
Yeah, they had they're shooting in California. There was a drag strip nearby, and
the Mythbusters always go there.
Yeah, so yeah. The guy who put the rocket engines on the drag cars, they hired him to put an actual rocket engine on the truck.
Wow.
Yeah. Fun. So it was a functional rocket engine.
That's awesome. Oh man, imagine being on that set.
Yeah.
Yeah, but as soon as I saw the truck, I mean, I'm sitting there thinking, like, yeah, I'm still at the point where I don't know what kind of movie this is, right? Because, you know, like, I'm like, well, is it going to be like a Flash Gordon type movie? Is it going to be, you know, a time travel movie? Is it going to be like, Red Dwarf or Doctor Who? Or, like, don't know what I'm in for. And then, like, this whole rocket thing starts, and, like, it's, like, like, it's the 80s, but it's not, like, so I'm just like, yeah.
When the rocket thing happened, I thought for sure it was going to be a time travel movie. And it, even though it's, like, it's not really it gives me Doctor Who vibes, just in that he's kind of, like we said, he's, like,
perfect,
the everyman hero and good at everything, and he has his posse that goes along with him. But it's definitely, I've never watched them, but I know there's an American version of Doctor Who that is apparently terrible, and I bet it's close to this movie.
I would have
liked to see the Hong Kong Cavaliers a little bit more fleshed out.
Yeah,
Perfect Tommy and all those guys.
Yeah,
like I think to your point, David, about them I can definitely see now that you mention it. There is a missing thread with the overall big bad that's like it's not there. And so you're kind of left watching the movie like, what is the problem? Like, who are they fighting? Who's coming? Like, is something coming?
Yeah.
And I think that I probably watched more videos that were talking like about this movie than I actually spent time watching the actual movie.
Trying to figure it out.
Yeah. But one of them was talking about the writer and how he would just constantly start rewriting this movie. Like I think the director said that, or one of the producers said that he would write a draft, he'd get 30 pages in, get bored, and then kind of toss it away and kind of restart. And that's kind of what this movie sometimes feels like. It's just the scraps of a bunch of different things smashed together.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then, but yeah, with the Hong Kong Cavaliers, I really felt like they needed more distinct personalities.
Yeah. But you know, one thing I do like about like the Hong Kong Cavaliers and some of the side characters, like even some of the Electroids, is that this movie is full of people that I'm like, oh, I know that guy, but only as an old guy.
Yeah.
You know, like when Clancy Brown shows up, or when Paul Guilfoyle or whatever his name is, the guy from CSI, when he's there, right? Like, it's just like, oh yeah, okay, I've seen this guy. Oh, that's Carla's husband from Cheers. Oh, right, you know, like we saw Vincent Schiavelli in Ghost. So I just love seeing all these younger versions of these guys that I'm just like, oh, okay, that's fun.
Yeah. Christopher Lloyd and his two henchmen, those they were brilliant, and realizing that they improvised a lot of their lines.
Yeah.
The cast is actually kind of funny, because when I think about it, I'm like, oh, if you took all of these actors at their best, you would have a really, and just a, I guess, a different story. But it's like, it's such a star-studded cast.
Yeah.
The only guy I think who never changed is Peter Weller. Like, I just find, and I find him intolerable. I don't know, maybe that will get more to my overall point about the movie, but just like walking into a movie where that guy is the lead was very jarring, and his personality I think doesn't serve the movie well. I read so many reviews that said Buckaroo, Jeff Goldblum would have been better, should have been Buckaroo, because then maybe it would have had
some charm.
a coherent tone.
Yeah. Well, I admit I'm a Peter Weller fan.
A RoboCop, so, man.
RoboCop, but like the New Age. He was in a bunch of movies in the 80s and I can't find the New Age now anywhere, so I couldn't
even watch
it. Yeah.
And wasn't he also a Dexter villain or something?
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, wasn't he a cop that turned bad? And Dexter had to kill him?
And he was on Star Trek for a while.
Maybe that was 24.
Everybody does their time on Star Trek, so...
Yeah, I pretty much only know him from RoboCop, yeah. But I watched the thing that kind of soured me on him is I just find him very bland, I guess. I was just listening to people talk about him on that Netflix document, that how the movies that made us or whatever, there's a RoboCop one, just sounded like, he just sounded intolerable. He just like... But the making of RoboCop, I mean, also sounds like it wasn't any fun. So maybe I should cut him some slack.
Oh, true. Yeah, I watched that episode too. But you know, like you do have a very solid point, though. Like Buckaroo should be having a bit more fun.
I just think that the problem, one of the things that kind of kept throwing me out of the movie was, and I think just having no sort of reverence for it or really any idea about it, was I didn't know if it was supposed to be funny, because Peter Weller is so serious. Yeah. All the time, you're just kind of like, okay, is he playing serious for laughs, or is it serious? And then because nobody around him is really like helping you figure this out either, you're just kind of, I don't know, it left me in a little bit of a lurch, I thought.
Well, yeah, I mean, I could even point to something like when they're like, let's rock, and they go play their show, because like now we're also rock stars. And yeah. So they go to the show, and he hears someone crying. Does he have superpowers? Is someone out there not having a good time? But they, like all of his bandmates are looking at him like, what the fuck is he doing? This is weird. But he's the same character throughout the entire movie. So why is that weird? Because that's just how he is.
Well, this is to my point, I guess. The weird thing about that scene is, what's her name? Penny?
Yeah, yep. Penny Pretty. Penny Pretty.
So Penny Pretty, and she's there, and she's like suicidal, and he's like, oh, I'm going to, and he keeps calling her Peggy. And at first you're like, oh, it's an accident. And then, but then he's like, right before he sits down to play a song, he's like, okay, I'm going to sing a song for you, Peggy. And I think, and I couldn't tell, it's like, it's supposed to be funny, maybe, but yeah. The delivery just makes him seem like a giant asshole.
Yeah. Well, and somebody's depressed in the audience and they shine a spotlight on her and
yeah. Give her a microphone. Yeah. Which Perfect Tommy is pissed off about. Are you kidding me right now?
Yeah. So that's the cringy part of the movie for me.
Yeah. It's weird.
On her. It's like that's like what not to do if you're like trying to support somebody.
Yeah.
It's funny, the first third of the movie when it's like jumping back and forth and it's exploring all the different aspects of Buckaroo Banzai, that's more fun, I think, when it sort of kind of get bogged down into trying to keep up to all the promises it made with, like, we have to address this and address this.
Yeah.
You start the movie with him driving through a mountain and you ended it. It looks like Independence Day in a clam shell.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, I think when I saw the title card and I'm like, okay, like, ninja rock star.
Yeah.
Why did they, like, play more on that a little bit? I think could have been cool, but I don't know. They didn't really lean into that enough, I think.
Well, okay, both of you seem to have watched a little bit more documentary stuff than I have. Because it was improvised largely, was it filmed sequentially as well?
That I don't know.
No.
Okay, because, like, there's a lot of different tones going on where as soon as you say that it was largely improvised, I go, that explains it. But the tone is all over the place, which is why I'm wondering what order did they film it in?
I'm going to do a quick Google search.
Because
my gut says it was not filmed sequentially.
Yeah.
Just because of how all over the place the tone is. Like, I think if you can... Well, normally I would like to think when a movie's filmed sequentially, you have an idea of what's happened before, so maybe you can figure it out. But this movie was kind of like, I don't know. This movie just seems like a lot of stuff thrown together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and then, like, you get to the point where, like, the black electroids come down to Earth, and the one of them comes out of the ship, falls off the ship, hits his head, and dies. And I'm just like, what is going on? Was that a decoy? Why do you introduce this character just to kill him immediately? Is this supposed to be funny?
Yeah. No, I don't have an answer to that.
Yeah. Or there's even the fact that, like, he goes through the eighth dimension or whatever, and he gets that brain-looking alien stuck to the bottom of his car, and then he's having a press conference about this little brain ball, and... Penny is invited to sit down at the, like, main table for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To provide commentary. Yep. Yeah. She's trying really hard, though.
Yeah, I don't fully understand this movie. Like, there seems to be, like, three fun little movies going on here.
Mm-hmm.
But together, it's just this weird mixture.
That scene is when he gets the ability to see the electroids.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to point out, this movie came out before They Live.
Okay.
But it reminds me a lot. I don't know if John Carpenter was watching this one and going like, aha!
I can do that better.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could have done without the Penny plot.
Yeah.
I think that could have been... That's almost could have been like another movie in itself.
Exactly. That just adds to this weird mess of things. Like, because it's now you're introducing two brand new characters, but one of them seems to be a legacy character. But, like, Jeff Goldblum is obviously supposed to be the new guy to the group. But why is there also this new girl to the group?
And why is Jeff Goldblum in chaps?
Yeah. Yeah, that's also a very good question. I was wondering that very much. Why is Jeff Goldblum all cowboyed up for this?
Yeah.
He claims that he knows the band and the comic book and everything. He should know that's not what their style. Their style is pop collars and skinny ties and, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
It's funny
that was when I felt like I was watching it, and I was like, I'm just gonna have to let this go. There's not enough time to. There's no time to question this.
Yeah, I mean, with the fashion, I know that I was like, oh, that scene in Ready Player One now makes more sense to me when he goes on the date dressed as Buckaroo Banzai.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
there's a bunch of really strange like non sequiturs, like the two guys rolling the motorcycle through the basement of the hotel.
Yeah, and oh hey, you can't drive that. Oh hey, it's Buckaroo Banzai because he's like the most famous person in the world or something.
I thought that the hunters who were like that was probably my favorite. One of my favorite scenes was those hunters that are going out, and then the asteroid comes. I thought those guys were going to come and be a little bit more.
Involved.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the one guy, he's holding two guns, and then the one jams because, of course.
Yeah. I just like the scene when he's like, throw me my gun, and you just hear the splash.
Sorry.
Did we want to mention the Harley-Davidson product placement throughout the movie, too?
Well, that's perfect. Because we actually have a segment on the show, so let's go to Sponsorship Corner. Yeah, actually, I was trying to direct the conversation there with the Sony boombox that Jeff Goldblum has, or the motorcycles. I couldn't remember if the guns had any labels on them, so... But you brought it back for us. So, always on the lookout for product placements in movies, this week, The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension is brought to you by Ford and Harley-Davidson, Yamaha and Sony, BF Goodrich, Monroe and Bell, Sony, Time Magazine, Everlast Batteries, Condor Lifts, Carnation, Vat69 Gin, Michelob Beer, Burger King, Fritos, and Pepsi, plus the fictional Team Banzai, Buckaroo Banzai and the Hong Kong Cavaliers, and the Yo-Yo Dyne Propulsion Systems. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I wanted to buy a Harley after watching the movie.
We'll see. There you go. He made it look like fun when he gets hit off the road for some reason. That was such an anticlimactic chase scene when he just, all of a sudden, Buckaroo's just out of commission.
Yeah. But if they were unloading the bikes off of a Harley-Davidson truck, it said Harley-Davidson on the side. He took a long time just kind of like tootling around on the bike.
Yeah.
Yeah. He mentions Harley-Davidson by name like three times.
Oh, yeah. There's a banner in one of the... hallways as well that says like, you know, convention and everything. Yeah they must have paid for a good chunk of this one.
I never even noticed, but I'm not a real, like, I guess I'm not a real motorcycle aficionado.
I'm not either.
See, the one that really draws your eye to it is the fact that they're rolling two motorcycles through the hallway towards the convention center.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny. I must be like impervious. Like, product placement has to be pretty blatant for me to even notice.
Yeah.
Some there's so many times we're doing this show and Sean comes on with Sponsorship Corner and I'm just like, I didn't even think about that. When was that? Unless it's like really, to go back to Harry and the Hendersons again, it was like really blatant where, you know, the fridge is toppled over, but all of this, everything is facing. All the margarine containers and milk cartons are all conveniently just facing outwards.
See, this is why I love having Sponsorship Corner in this show. So, okay, so let's talk a little bit about our Lectroids, because they are now in full mission mode here, because John Worfen has escaped and killed, you know, what's his face from Breaking Bad? See, another guy that I'm like, Mike from Breaking Bad.
Mike Ehrmantraut.
See, and he's sitting there eating Burger King.
Yeah.
Yeah, we go into this whole, like, the Lectroid storyline where we've got our black Lectroids trying to get the Buckaroo's help and the red Lectroids that are trying to get the world dominated. And the president, for some reason, is also
Intraction.
So once this part of the movie starts, like the whole hunt for the Lectroids and all that sort of stuff, like what's going on? Someone help me out here.
This part of the movie really reminded me of, maybe because we just watched it, but it reminded me of the Batman 66 movie. The relationship between Buckaroo and the president reminds me of Batman and Commissioner Gordon, where it's just like the president is clearly just kind of an idiot and he just needs this guy to come to his rescue.
Yeah, with his special advisor Yakov Smirnoff.
the
president himself is actually he's the Nazi that gets his face melted in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, I recognize him, but I didn't know why. That's cool. Small world.
Yeah, I guess so.
So the red Lectroids, they attack Buckaroo Banzai's headquarters because they have the overthruster in there.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the overthruster is that's the flux capacitor looking thing, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, and the John. The bad guy, John...
Orphan?
Orphan.
Okay.
He can't escape without a working overthruster, but the Dr. Lizardo, his overthruster, he's crazy, so the overthruster just looks like he took apart a toaster and put it back together.
Okay.
Yeah, so they need the working overthruster.
Okay. I don't know. Yeah, this movie gets out of control. I don't know. This is a... This is such a tough movie for me.
I like the red Lectroids are like the weird clam look, like crustacean dinosaur looking
ones, right?
Yeah.
Okay. It's kind of funny that so those are the bad guys.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Did not pick up on that.
And the black Lectroids are the Rastafarians.
The black guys, yeah.
Yeah.
And the weird celestial black lady.
Yeah. So they're the good guys, but they're also the ones that are going to destroy the Earth if we let John Warpin go.
Yeah. Right.
And was Russia involved?
Yes.
I thought I remember there being some sort of Russia.
Yeah, they were going to launch something on Russia that would make it look like it was coming from the United States.
Yeah. And then they would launch the nuclear arsenal.
Okay.
Because it's an 80s film and it all comes back to nuclear war.
Yeah, it all comes back to the Cold War. Great.
Yeah, yeah, and a short form declaration of war. I like that where it's like it says short form. Like this has to be a comedy, right?
Yeah, there was stuff like that where I was like, okay, this seems comedic, but like you're just never sure.
Like the running baked bouté joke, right?
Yeah. John Smallberries.
Yeah.
I think there's an opportunity for somebody to recut this movie into like a clear comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Had some sound of some boings and stuff.
Yeah. Some whales.
all the off camera sound effects Sean hates.
So in answer to your question earlier, Colin, I think that they were playing it straight for comedic effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that is true. Like, I think that's what the actors are doing. I think this is a movie where whoever the editor is failed big time.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing I've always heard actors talk about. The hard thing about doing film is that you can put in a performance and think you're making one movie, but you really don't know what movie you've made until you see the final cut.
Yeah.
And it has more to do with, like, what the director and the editor decide to put together in that final cut. And I think that's where this movie falls apart, because it was a weird watch for me, because I was looking at it and I was like, okay, I really don't think anybody is giving a bad performance.
Yeah.
I would say that, like, acting wise, everybody's doing a great job, but it just never vibes together.
Yeah.
Well, see, and I almost go back to the fact that you're saying that Peter Weller is not very likable. And I sit there and think that, you know what, I think you have a good point. Like, imagine this movie with Kurt Russell from Big Trouble in Little China. Like, that character as Buckaroo Banzai. Or, like, Bruce Campbell as Buckaroo Banzai.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this movie needed Buckaroo to be somebody more gregarious and... like overconfident, like not just a I'm so cool, nothing phases me. I don't think his lips budge from a straight line the entire movie. Like, it's just... he does not emote.
That's what they saw in him to put him in RoboCop.
Exactly, yeah, probably.
No, like, because, yeah, he had a couple of fun moments. Like, the moment where he licks his hand to stick it to Doctor's forehead. You know, the, has the formula. But, you know, like, there's a few fun moments like that, but it's just everything else, he's taking himself too seriously. But not in that campy way. Not in the fun campy way.
Yeah. Bill Pullman would have been good, too.
Yeah.
He must have been busy.
Game over, man.
I do also think this movie, I would have liked it. I think it could have done well if it had some British humor injected into it as well.
Yeah.
Because that's the kind, it's so off the wall, especially for the time, I think. Like, that's the kind of the only thing that could have saved it a little bit. Like...
to just have
that really like sarcastic bent with somebody who's just really, I'm kind of like in my mind as you guys were throwing out names, I was like, I feel like I would have liked to see Cary Elwes as Buckaroo Banzai with like just with a really crazy bunch of Hong Kong Cavaliers, like just really off the wall, really over the top.
Yeah.
That's the thing, is the comedy comes across with someone like Jeff Goldblum. But it doesn't necessarily come across with some of the other people, especially Peter Weller.
Yeah.
But Perfect Tommy was pretty perfect.
Yeah. he was pretty good. And so was Reno. I liked Reno as well. But like Colin said earlier, it would have been nice if there was a little bit more fleshing out from those characters.
Yeah.
Like, I like the name Perfect Tommy, but you need to explain to me why he's perfect. Like, what does he do? Like, where does the perfect come from?
Yeah, especially since he doesn't seem to know everything like the other guys do.
Yeah.
Perfect Tommy's the one that's wrong the most.
But he looks good with his bleached blonde hair.
That's right.
I'm curious to know what you guys think of the closing credits.
Well, I was just going to bring that up because did you notice that Perfect Tommy's outfit changes every time they cut? Like every time every time they cut to a different, like a new group of people joining them, Perfect Tommy's in a different outfit.
I didn't notice that. I mean, it seems to me that's the highlight of this film for a lot of people. And I was watching a thing, like, there's a lot of movies that rip it off, like The Life Aquatic and stuff that I've seen before that I would have never picked up on that at all. I was watching an interview with somebody that they were saying that at the time that they filmed it, they didn't have the music ready. So the song that they're actually walking to is Uptown Girl.
Uptown Girl.
And, like, I almost think that would have been better. Like, that would have been...
Well, I'll imagine that next time I watch it.
Yeah. I wanted to find on YouTube to see if they had
a cut with it,
but I didn't see one.
Well, yeah, I mean, there is the whole bit where Penny gets abducted, though, and see, that's another bit where I'm like, I think they're going for comedy, but something's missing because of the whole putting honey on her for the ants. Like, I love that, but we didn't get to see it actually play out at any point.
No, then we saw a spider, and then there was the slug thing.
The weird slug thing where, don't touch that, and then he just chucks it across the room anyway.
Yeah.
Doesn't care. And everyone's getting killed by the bio darts or whatever you would call them. What were they called? I don't know. I'd say bio.
I don't know.
Sure. Weird little sucker things.
Yeah, Rawhide got killed by one of those.
Yeah.
They looked like they were left over from Aliens.
Yeah. Unpainted bits.
What is the comparative budget from this movie to Star Wars? I was curious about that.
Oh, Star Wars was like next to nothing, wasn't it?
Just because, I don't know, but like, and I mean, this is after even the last Starfighter, right?
Yeah.
Which is also a movie that's new to me from this podcast, but I was surprised at how poor the spaceships looked. They looked, with the $17 million budget at the time, I feel like you probably should have been able to do better.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of appreciated that they went for that more organic look to them,
including the skin vest that you had to wear to navigate it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I don't even know what that person's job was in the cockpit, but yeah. But yeah, this weird skin vest. Looks like Rocky's going to come in there and start punching them.
Yeah, those were a tough watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just looked it up. Star Wars is an $11 million budget. And that would have been 6 years earlier. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they did pretty good, I felt.
this time in movie history was a little unusual, too, because you had, like, you had movies that were crossing genres, like Princess Bride. They didn't know, is it a comedy, is it a romance, how do we market this?
Yeah.
You had The Labyrinth come out. What do we do with this? Is it a kid's film? Is it adult, right?
Dark Crystal.
Yeah, Dark Crystal. And then you get Buckaroo Banzai, which seems to be intentionally kind of crossing those borders, because the Raiders Lost Ark is meant to look like a serial comic book too, right?
Yeah.
And that made a ton of money. So that one made a ton of money. Maybe we can do a comic book based one with Buckaroo Bug, but they didn't go all out with the comic book. They didn't go all out with the comedy. They didn't get, like, they did a little bit of, so we get a hodgepodge of a bunch of ideas, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is kind of in the era before movie trailers were a big thing, but like, I would pity the person who had to put a trailer together for this movie to try to and try to figure out like, what am I selling? Who is this for? Like, I had read that one of their big marketing campaigns was they tried to market it to Star Trek fans at Star Trek conventions and that kind of stuff, which I guess makes sense. But man, I could, I wouldn't even know where to begin. And it's funny too, because like Labyrinth and Princess Bride are like, you know, two of my favorite movies of all time, and I totally could see the same with those, but like they work on the watch.
Yeah.
This one, I think you're still kind of like, it's a very specific type of person who's probably stoned or on drugs. Who's gonna like?
No, I promise you, being stoned did not help the watch of this movie. In fact, it may have confused me even more. Maybe that's why I'm still just learning stuff about this movie. I don't know. I mean, I keep thinking about the fact that it was improvised. Like, that's blowing my mind. Like, just even the idea that they tie it all together with this War of the Worlds reasoning. And so it's just like how much of that was made up? Like, it just, because there's ideas of, it's like a lot of people have thrown out a good idea for a scene. But not everyone is everyone is yes anding, but they're yes anding wrong. That's kind of, you know?
Yeah. Or they're they're like, yeah, they're yes anding like Michael Scott with the gun in the office. Like, you know, no matter what, I always have the gun somewhere. Yeah. So like, you're not.
but there's a few places where they're not yes anding, like the alien that comes out of the spaceship, falls off and hits his head and dies. You know, that's the guy going, nope, there's no scene here. I am just
yeah.
And the funny thing is, I actually think Buckaroo Banzai would make the perfect comic book if they were ever to continue on. I think the graphic novels are where you could really take this character and this story and flesh it out really well and just tell, you know, your insane kind of stories over the years.
Yeah.
It could even be a fun animated series of some sort.
Yeah, animated, yeah.
Like an Aeon Flux type of thing or something.
Just like, and I say animated because you can do a lot more fun stuff with animated, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even when he goes through the mountain in the beginning and he's going through the eighth dimension, you know, they tried really hard with those special effects, but, you know, but if with animation, like, you could do some really cool stuff with that. I mean, you know, like, and if you also add 40 years, you can do a lot of stuff too. So that helps, but.
Yeah.
Well, if the overall question is, does it still stand up? I still like it, but everyone I show it to, they do not. My wife can't stand it. But if they make another movie from the new book, I would totally see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, I was like, I feel like we should wrap this up, but I don't really remember how it ends other than the ending credit. Like, I don't know. I don't remember how the story resolves.
the story resolves with Lizardo getting chased by them in the pod, getting chased by John, whatever his name was.
Parker. John Parker.
John Parker. Yeah, they were chasing him in the ship, and then they blew him up. So, like, the escape pod that he had on the ship had the capabilities of blowing up the mother ship. So that right there seems like a flaw in the design. And he knew that they were there and just dropped them, hoping that he wouldn't figure out a way to fly this thing.
Yeah, it was close.
Yeah. Somehow he manages to, yeah, they've got just regular booster cables on board.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, that's how it ends, though, is with him parachuting down and his buddy John Parker taking off in the stolen ship. And then with his, like, electrical kiss, manages to bring Penny Pretty back to life. And then they, I guess, do it. And there's the end. That there's the end, Colin. See, now is it bringing back flashbacks?
Yeah, I
don't say bringing back memories. I say bringing back flashbacks, like you were at war or something.
Yeah, I was at war with this movie the entire time I watched it.
Fun fact: the coordinates that they set the oscillator up to, or whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. Those are the coordinates for Cape Canaveral, Florida. Yeah, Kennedy Space Center.
Nice.
Just fun little Easter egg. But there we go. That is Buckaroo Banzai, I guess. Sorry, I guess I should give respect to the full title, Buckaroo Banzai Across, The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. Now, Colin... David, on IMDb, it scored 6.3 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 70. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 68% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 69%. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like a guy named John falling out of a spaceship and hitting his head on a rock. Hit us with some reviews.
All right. I'm going to cycle through some, pick the best ones.
Peter M. says 1 out of 5 stars. 35 years ago, I saw the trailer for this movie as a teenager and thought it looked cool as hell.
I missed it, though, and in the intervening years, never ended up renting it on VHS or DVD until finally I saw it streaming on Prime and thought, now's my chance. What a letdown. I wanted it to be a zany, hip sci-fi adventure comedy. I wanted it to be. It had a lot of the elements and a great cast, and I definitely adjusted for it was the 80s, quote unquote. But something was so off in the production, it just never capitalized on what it could have been. All I could think about was how much the action looked like the crappy cop movie Dirk Diggler and Reed Rothschild making Boogie Nights. They were going for parody, but they missed wide.
I can see that. I mean, it's almost like they either needed to try harder or they needed to try less hard. That's almost how this movie feels. Is it's like either they needed to put a little more effort into making it a more coherent story, or they needed to pull back and make it look cheaper than it was. Give it some like classic Star Trek camp.
Yeah. Dolby M says 3 out of 5 stars. People sometimes talk about this in the same breathy way they talk about Flash Gordon. I'm no fan, but Flash Gordon is far superior. What Buckaroo Banzai does do is take you on a sort of wild ride exploring interdimensional and possibly alien issues. I mean, he does a lot of things. He also does brain surgery, drives hyper-fast experimental cars, and plays in some kind of van. There's a lot going on, and a lot of it gets in the way. Renaissance sci-fi man he may be, but he's also just so nothing to look at.
many a scene I was confused about who Buckaroo even was.
I kept thinking he must be Jeff Goldblum because, well, Jeff Goldblum is cool. I probably am with that guy the most.
Yeah. See, at least Flash Gordon had a theme song by Queen.
Right? Actually, Flash Gordon's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who wants to live forever? Die!
But see, that's one where they, you know, they leaned into the camp a bit more than this one did.
Yep.
Yeah.
DM says 1.5 out of 5. Unnecessarily complicated plot doesn't disguise the very unfunny acting in this sci-fi action-adventure comedy. A famous scientist helps aliens who threaten to trigger a nuclear war with the Soviets. RoboCop plays the scientist, Mr. Henderson plays the baddie, and then in parentheses he says badly, and Jeff Goldblum plays Jeff Goldblum. Yeah, he does. Okay, we'll go out with a good one. Last review is from Anne N, who says 5 out of 5 stars. People who review this movie poorly just don't get it. It's literally for entertainment purposes only. Don't watching it expecting Star Trek braininess, Star Wars effects, or any other high expectations.
It's plain, stupid, silly fun. Think Flash Gordon. It's a B movie loaded with stars. Three Stooges stupidity with no real intellect needed.
If you're not into silly B-grade stuff, it's unlikely you will enjoy this. It's very period, too, so if you're an 80s product, you're more likely to enjoy it. Of course, the end credit sequence is its claim to fame.
Nice. I like that review. That was good.
Yeah. Well, see, it sounds like the general consensus on this movie is you should be watching Flash Gordon.
As a primer.
Yeah. Right on. So, yeah, like I said, we've got 6.3 and 69 out of audience members and 70 and 68 out of critics. I mean, those are rather high numbers, I have to admit. Like, I'm impressed.
Because I was shocked by the critics' Rotten Tomatoes. Like, the critics gave this movie a 60-something.
Yeah, 68.
And they give, like, I don't know. I would have thought the critics would have, like, ranked this movie below 10%.
Yeah. For me, this movie, I'm glad I went on this adventure. It was, yeah, The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai is right. I still don't know what I watched, and I don't think I ever will. But in a weird way, I enjoyed it. But it was weird as shit, man. Like, I just... I don't even know how else to put it. There were some great performances, and having known absolutely nothing about this movie except for the title of it before watching it, it's just, it was baffling to me, but it was, thank you, James F., for making me watch this movie I've never seen, because I don't know if I ever would have otherwise. David, let's send it over to you, because, I mean, you're someone that's been around on this for a long time, and I just, you know, I don't think we need two back-to-back just baffling, I don't know what I watched comments on this movie, so we'll save Colin for last. What do you think about your viewing of Buckaroo Banzai this time? Before now, how long has it been since you've seen Buckaroo Banzai?
Actually, I watched it again about 5 years ago with my son.
Okay.
And then for this podcast, I watched it last month and again today. Yeah, it is tongue-in-cheek, and if you kind of understand the humor, then I think it's a blast when I watch it. I laugh at it a lot, and my wife looks at me like I'm crazy. So there's different wavelengths. So I think it's cool. I would totally watch the sequel, the 25-year later sequel or whatever it would be, if they make it.
37.
30. Yeah. Oh, I'm really old. And if they get the original cast to come back and do cameos, that would be so fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But would you make it the same way, or would you, like, think of something like Starsky and Hutch. You know, the series was serious, but then they brought out an Owen Wilson, Ben Stiller movie because they saw the humor in it. Or Chips with Dax Shepard, or like anything like that, where the original was serious, the new one is straight comedy, or would you try to keep camp as the humor side?
Well, for the diehard Buckaroo Banzai fans, I think keeping the camp would be good. I don't think anyone would be upset if it was a Ben Stiller, Owen Wilson, like, comedy.
Yeah.
But I think the camp is sort of the gem of what it is.
You'd have to do an Evil Dead Army of Darkness type sequel.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I just remembered Ice Pirates that came out in the early 80s, too. And that was, like, a sci-fi comedy, and it, like, crashed. It just bombed. But I remember laughing at it as a kid when I was 14, so...
Yeah. Yeah, right on. Well, see, and I mean, on those sentiments of what you said, you know, you say you show it to someone like your wife and she hates it. I don't hate this movie. I can't say that I hated my experience on this movie. It's not going to go down as a legendary all-time favorite by any means, but yeah, it had things to like, for sure. Colin, bring us down. What are your thoughts on this movie?
You know what? This conversation has softened me a little bit.
Yeah.
I was walking into this show, like, I was prepared to eviscerate this movie. And I think what it comes down to is now I'm just willing to say, you know what? It's not for me.
Yeah.
I don't think it's for most people, to be honest, but it's definitely not for me. It's just not what I enjoy. I'm not a big cult movie guy. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think that I generally, like, yeah, there's no real cult movies, I think, that have ever really appealed to me.
So I shouldn't be suggesting things like Eric the Viking or The Adventures of Baron Munchausen or The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert to you.
Yeah, those all sound terrible.
No Donnie Darko.
Donnie Darko maybe, but only because I like Jake Gyllenhaal. He's in that one, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I think I've said mostly all I have to say about it.
Yeah.
I'd kind of just sum it up as I think there was a good movie here at some point, but it seems like a lot just happened around it that probably made it bad. I just am not willing to believe that a movie with that cast could be terrible.
Yeah.
But it seems like I said before, something happened in the edit or something happened with the script. Things were taken out or like just there's good pieces here to build what I think would have actually been a commercial success.
Yeah.
But the execution was poor. Well, it kind of reminds me of one of those movies, even though it ends with saying like, oh, we'll be back with, you know, Buckaroo Banzai versus the World Crime League. Even that seems like the biggest joke of the movie,
because it seems like
you knew there was no way you were coming back. Like,
and so
because of that, it's almost like it seemed like they knew they weren't going to get another shot. So they tried to do so much in one movie where it's almost like if you would just paste it out a little bit more and be like, you know what? No, this movie, we're going to do the eighth dimension stuff. Then guess what? The next movie we're going to do,
the Penny, you know, Pretty comes end, back. To
Penny
life.
Pretty comes back. And then we're going to figure all that out. And then even maybe a movie before that's like, let's assemble the Hong Kong Cavaliers and see what everybody's about. Like,
you can see the full saga in your head. Yeah. But yeah, but instead they threw it all in a blender and ended up with this.
Yeah. Yeah. You go through a mountain.
Yeah. Biggest joke of the entire movie. That's awesome. Well, there we go. That is The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension, and that's our show for this week. Oh boy, a big, huge thank you to our special guest, David Owen.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
This was fun. This was my first podcast.
Nice.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like you, it probably wouldn't be for me either, but I mean, if you're real into cult stuff, that seems like a good vein to go down.
Yeah, well, I'm thinking now, like, you know, yeah, I could probably do this. Yeah. Yeah, it'd be a cool niche. I'll start with The Hunger.
No idea what that is.
The Hunger Games? No, just kidding.
David Bowie, Susan Sarandon, Catherine Deneuve, 1983, William Dafoe's in it. It's a vampire movie.
Oh.
Okay. I mean, I love vampires, so.
Yeah, if you want a classy vampire movie with Catherine Deneuve and Susan Sarandon, there's you go. And David Bowie's in it.
Yeah.
Sweet.
So that's already a step up from Lost Boys for sexy vampires.
Oh, yeah. 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 Now, that's a well-made movie. Yeah.
If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out on the business end is, well, just go tell people. Share our posts. Word of mouth is the lifeblood of a podcast trying to get noticed. Or go to whatever app it is you listen to your podcast on and give us some stars. 5 is the best. If you want to give us 5 stars, a little review. Just help drive us up the charts. Help us get noticed on those weird algorithms that those podcast catchers use. Or if you want to go above and beyond and become a financial supporter of our show and get a shout out because you're an executive producer, just like Joshua Blum, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne and become part of our Patreon community.
And check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all of our podcast episodes and our social media. And I mean, I told myself after watching this movie, like, I was going to ex-nay the listener requests and all that, because, you know, it was a... Sean can attest multiple times I tried to get out of watching this movie. But, you know, after the conversation, it wasn't so bad. So if you want to recommend movies for us to watch, you can do so at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Thank you, James F., for reaching out for your suggestion this week. And thank you for listening. Join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One. Nice.
All right.
Yes.
Cool. Thanks, so, you guys.
Outstanding. Thanks. Well, hey, you know, you legitimately cleared some things up for me. I mean, it was that was a great contribution, man. You came prepared. Holy shit, that was awesome. Yeah, you guys had some great stuff coming. So
cool.
Right on. So
heck, if you want to do The Hunger closer to Halloween, let me know.
Oh, maybe.